This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Nuclear energy holds a lot of promise as an energy source that does not pump carbon and other greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. But what to do with all that radioactive material that comes along with this and also with the development of nuclear weapons? There are tons and tons of highly radioactive sludge and gear and material that is deadly to anyone who spends any time in proximity to it. And this will be the case for 10,000 years. PBS's program Independent Lens recently took a look at this, at how the material is being stored and how future generations will be warned about this threat long after our civilization has crumbled and gone away. The program is called Containment. It's available online for viewing at pbs.org. We're joined by the filmmakers, Peter Galson. He is a professor of physics at Harvard University, and Rob Moss. He's with the Department of Visual and Environmental Studies at Harvard University. And our phone lines are open. If you got a question or a comment, we'd like to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Peter, do people generally think that this is a problem that has been solved?
Well, you know, we tend not to think about waste much. It's not the glamorous part of electronics to think of electronic waste, or the glamorous part of making new substances to think about chemical waste. And it's not the exciting part of nuclear power, or even the worrisome and important part of nuclear weapons, to think about weapons waste. But it's crucial that we do think about it. And that's why Rob Moss and I turned to this film. What are we going to do with 60 or 70 years of nuclear waste that's been discarded? And it's sort of out of sight, out of mind. People don't really want to think about it too much, but it is an important question. Where is it going to go? No nation has a well-worked-out plan for how to dispose of nuclear waste.
I'm glad you brought that up, no nation, because this is not just a problem for the United States. Every country that has nuclear energy has the same problem. Mexico, they've got a nuclear power plant in Veracruz, the Laguna Verde plant, and, you know, all Japan, as you mentioned in your documentary, you talk about Fukushima, and they've got other nuclear problems as well. So, Rob Moss, you know, we're not alone here.
We're certainly not alone. And we've not been alone for a long time, that the problem of nuclear waste has been with us from the beginning. At the beginning, when nuclear weapons were first being created, the urgency of making a weapon to end the war with Germany and Japan, to counteract the problem of the arms race with the Soviet Union, everybody was working extremely hard to make the weapon, but everybody understood that there was no time then, you know, that we'd deal with it later. There was no time then to deal with the waste, and the waste has been sitting there ever since. It's worth noting that around the world, something more than 90%, something like 93% of all the spent fuel rods, the things that create the nuclear power to begin with, are sitting in the same pools that they were meant to stay in for just a few years, and they're all still there, in the most dangerous place they can be.
This all comes under the supervision and the authority of the Energy Department, right? Is that right, Peter?
That's true. The Department of Energy in the United States, before that it used to be called the Atomic Energy Commission, is responsible for this waste. Although, as Rob just mentioned, a lot of the power waste, you have to distinguish between waste that comes from the rods that are put into reactors, and that nuclear fission occurs in those rods, and that creates heat, makes steam, makes electrical power that makes our lights go on, from the kind of materials that are used in nuclear weapons. But both produce nuclear waste. And the one part of the problem that is probably most advanced in being addressed in the United States is the burial of the kind of discarded objects that came in contact with very dangerous materials like plutonium in the production of nuclear weapons. And that waste is being buried about 2,100 feet underground in a salt mine, not far at all from Texas, in southeastern New Mexico near Carlsbad. And so that was called a waste isolation pilot plant. It was designed to see if it was possible to get started on this project of getting the waste out from where it was temporarily stored and into something that could be there for the long term. And it's in that context that people began to worry about how you would mark or designate or prevent people from entering this space for a period of at least 10,000 years.
And so how do you do that, Rob?
How do you mark?
Yeah.
How do you,
it's
a great question.
For MS, you tackle it in your program. You 10,000 years, you know, like Stonehenge, what is that, like 3,000 years old? It's
as Peter is fond of saying, Stonehenge is 3,000 years in the future if you go back 10,000 years ago. It's a very long time ago, 10,000 years. It's a very long time in the future, 10,000 years from now. And there's no way of knowing what the world will be like then. So there's a couple of competing interests here. One is that, you know, languages maybe last 1,000 years. So if you leave something in a language, it's very likely it will not be understood. Political institutions last, you know, at the most 1,000 years. We're talking 10,000 years. How do you communicate with the future? And how do you deal with the moral imperative that if you create this stuff, aren't we obliged to somehow deal with it in a responsible way for our children, our grandchildren, their grandchildren, that we're connected to the future? Someone says in the film, John Lomberg says in the film, that the future 10,000 years is going to come, whether we want it to or not, and the stuff will still be there and still dangerous, and our moral responsibility will still be intact. So the problem of how to do it was on the table to be able to open the waste isolation pilot plant at all when it was first opened. And it was a kind of gesture. It was a kind of moral gesture. It doesn't actually solve the problem.
But you're looking 10,000 years into the future, but I'm more concerned about the future that we have now. And we have an energy department that could soon be led by former Texas Governor Rick Perry. He's a leading candidate who's been nominated by Donald Trump. And Rick Perry has expressed his support for establishing a highly radioactive waste areas in Texas. And that would, particularly over in Andrews, Texas, which is nearby Carlsbad. They've got that strip of highway that connects Andrews and Carlsbad. They call that the Isotope Highway because there's so many high-level nuclear energy sites right there. So is that something that we need to be tuning in on, Peter?
We do need to pay attention to how waste is disposed of, and each of the different kinds of waste probably needs somewhat different solutions. There are things that can be safely kept on the surface or near the surface. There are things that really need to be buried deeply. There's the question of the nuclear fuel rods. There's the very radioactive sludge that is left over from the production of nuclear weapons. And so we're going to be facing this question. You know, I often think that there's certain problems that we have the option of addressing. You know, we can say we should go to Mars now, we should go to Mars in 200 years or 500 years or maybe never. That's a question that's really optional for us. But the question of dealing with nuclear waste is not optional. Whether we build more nuclear power plants or not, whether we build more nuclear weapons or not, we have the accumulated waste of many decades of production. And right now, that waste is on the surface and in not very safe conditions. So we're going to have to deal with it. And the West Texas site and other sites all around the country that are being discussed, or Yucca Mountain, which was canceled, right, the waste isolation pilot plant in Carlsbad, and then analogous
okay, we'll
around the world.
We'll talk about that. We got to take a quick break. We're going to take a one-minute break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davis. When you have nuclear energy and nuclear bombs, there is waste that comes from that, this trash that becomes accumulated, spent fuel rods and other items. It's too radioactive to be hanging around. It's got to be put someplace safe. But where is that? Is there actually any place on the earth that is inert that you could put that and let it sit there for 10,000 years and it not contaminate and kill people? That's what we're talking about. It was a PBS Independent Lens, a documentary that aired recently, and now it's available for streaming online. It's called Containment, and we're speaking with two of the filmmakers behind the project, Peter Gallison and also Rob Moss, and they're also experts in physics and environmental studies. Let's get a caller on this. The number is 210-614-8980 if you want to join us. And Rogelio called in. Hi, Rogelio. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. And So what I was thinking, it probably might be too expensive right now, but our technology is getting better and better as far as sending items out into space. What about, making like a huge cargo storage thing that can be shot out into space? Has anybody really considered that? It's right. Probably too expensive right now, but maybe if we keep working on it, that might be a good option.
All right, Rogelio, thank you for the call. And Peter?
Well, it's a really good idea. If we could get the waste, say, into the sun, it would be completely harmless to us here and wouldn't bother anybody in the future. The problem is that rocketry is still a very dangerous activity, and we've lost some of our most precious astronauts and teachers, and accidents happen. And the last thing in the world you would want would be a rocket to explode like Challenger did or the Columbia did in the atmosphere, dispersing radioactive waste over much of the United States. Some of the shuttle pieces fell over Texas. You wouldn't want nuclear waste to be dispersed in that way. So at least for the foreseeable future, the means of getting things completely safely out of the Earth's gravitational tug is just not safe enough to be able to use, to be able to dispose of the vast quantities of waste that we have in a safe way.
Well, we had 16 pounds of plutonium in the Cassini probe. We shot that into space.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes the rockets, we have a good safety record relative to other things for getting astronauts out too, but we have rockets that explode. We do send radioactive material is a power source that's that runs satellites, for example. But there is a fear that if you had big quantities of this waste in regularly scheduled cargo barges, essentially going out into space, that an accident could be catastrophic. It's very expensive and it's not safe enough for current use. Of course, if there was a safe way to get the waste to the sun, that would be great.
So after the space elevator is in place, maybe then.
Maybe then.
Okay, because that's way in the future. Another call, Alan. Hey, Alan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
What I would do is reprocess this stuff into rods and use it to fuel nuclear plants.
Okay, Alan, thank you for that question. Peter, you're the physicist. Why not that?
Well, reprocessing is something that's been used. All of the nuclear weapons waste is reprocessed waste. You take the rods, you put them into nitric and hydrochloric acid, you chemically separate out the plutonium that you want, and you make bombs with it. The problem is that all the other liquids, the sludge that's left over from dissolving those rods, also contains very high-level waste. And that's one of the big problems that we now have at Hanford and at the Savannah Riverside, our two big weapons production plants, where we have about over 200 million-gallon tanks filled with this sludge, and gradually that's being evaporated. The residual sludge is being mixed with sand and grout and made into glass, and those glass logs need to be buried somewhere. So that is a possibility, but the problem with reprocessing is the waste that the reprocessing itself produces. It does allow you to separate out uranium and plutonium that can be used to make power, just as the caller says. He's absolutely right.
So every time we handle some of this product, we're creating more contaminated product. You know, the gloves and the cost, the suits and everything that's being used and the tools, all that's got to go somewhere because now that is radioactive. Even though it's not a spent nuclear rod, it's still, not good to be lying around. Is that right, Rob?
It's like the two complicating features are that once you introduce radioactive elements into the environment, they don't go away. They last as long as they're going to last. That's what a half-life is. And there's no physics solution to that. There's no way to get rid of the stuff. So it's really a question of locating it somewhere and believing you're making the best choice among choices that are imperfect and among choices that the point of us using a 10,000-year time frame is not to say that the future is more important than the present. I don't think it is. But it's a way to begin to think about the present, to rethink about the present. looking through the lens of the future. And if you have to keep something safe for that kind of time frame, it's going to go wrong. I mean, there's no way to keep these things safe for that kind of time frame, and probably sooner than later. There was a leak in the waste isolation pilot plant on Valentine's Day 2014, and it was a small leak. But it was a leak created by the most kind of wonderfully human problem, a kind of just simple problem of communication, a homonym. They were saying that to put into these barrels, you want to get rid of the liquid because the liquid is the most mobile of it. You want to make these things as inert as you can make them. So you have to put in kitty litter. You have to put in a desiccant. And the report said, what they said to do is to use an inorganic kitty litter. But it was translated as an organic kitty litter. And that organic kitty litter mixed with the materials that were in the barrels created what amounts to a bomb, and it exploded. And the problem is that there's no way to guard against that. I mean, that's just a simple human error. Something sounds the same. Sounds the same within the same state, within the same agency, within the same language, within the same culture, and we still make mistakes, and that's the problem with nuclear materials.
Another caller, Jonathan. Jonathan, hey, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Welcome. I had regarding nuclear waste was about 10 or 20 years ago, I heard of a candle-style reactor that is supposedly made up of a whole bunch of waste, and you essentially bury it underground and light one end of it, and over the next 100 years or so, it would go through the entire set to the far end. And it wouldn't have the problems of being able to overheat or melt down or need human interaction to continue drawing power while the waste is continuing to be used. How come I haven't heard anything about those in a long time?
Jonathan, that is very provocative. Thank you for calling in with that. Peter Galson.
I don't know the particular technology that Jonathan's referring to. There are a variety of proposals and even some types of reactors that have been built in small prototypes that do that are safer to operate and produce less waste than the ones we have now. I mean, the problem of introducing new forms of reactors is tough, and it's economic and engineering problems both. Right now, the biggest issue facing the nuclear power industry is not the people who want to expand it or the people that want to contract it. It's just economics. And the discovery of fracked gas and oil and new forms of alternative energy have made building new nuclear plants very difficult, even the ones that we know how to scale up and run pretty easily. So introducing new technologies is a possibility. Although, as I say, I don't know the exact technology that Jonathan is referring to, but they're molten salt reactors, they're modular reactors, all sorts of different reactors that have been proposed and that have some promise, but scaling them up, making them work, and making them work economically in a very tough energy environment is an extreme challenge for the coming years.
Another caller. Here's Terry. Terry, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I've actually been in the WIP site down 1,000 feet below surface and seen how the salt encases the waste from the Los Alamos National Laboratories and also medical waste. What happened? Did they close WIP for a reason, or did, you know, because Carlsbad was a very good economically wanting to do it place, and it was doing it for 25, 30 years.
Okay. All right. So, Rob, thank you, Terry. Is WIP closed at Carlsbad?
WIP was closed, had been closed since 2014 when that explosion took place. It's recently opened and is starting to move things in again in a small way. I believe that people have to be in hazmat suits in a way that they didn't before. They're still working out the kinks. They've started opening it again. I mean, it is a place that the people of Carlsbad, over the course of time, became very enthusiastic about it. It really has helped their economy. On the other hand, This leak that took place was never supposed to happen, and it's somewhere between $500 million and $2 billion, depending on what estimates you, how far into the future you think you can go to make this thing safe now. So it's cost a huge amount of money. It's stopped. It's been a stop in the workflow. The salt is a good place to put things because this was, for example, at the WIP site, that salt was laid down 250 million years ago. It's still there. It's still intact. That means it's pretty stable. You put the waste in there, and the salt kind of creeps in and closes around the barrels, actually crushes the barrels and releases the waste into the salt itself and seals it. That's the plan. It's not a bad plan, and among the options, it's probably one of the better ones.
There's a caller with Henry. Henry, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, we're not too good at sealing away stuff. We couldn't even do it for a couple of decades with Love Canal. They took hazardous waste, buried it, sealed it with clay, and said, don't do anything there. They built houses on top and ran the foundations right through the seal. The other thing is that the cost of this stuff is never figured in to the cost of nuclear power, and that's fraud.
All right, Henry, thank you for the call. And so, Peter, did you want to address that?
Thank you. Thank you for the call. We called the film Containment because this idea of trying to seal things off seemed really a deep question. It was a problem for nuclear waste, and as the caller suggests, it's a problem for almost every kind of technology, getting rid of electronic waste or getting rid of, you know, arsenic or mercury or all the other products that are, you know, the things that form in the byproducts of making our modern society. The problem is that, you know, you're working in a sense against the natural sort of tendency towards entropy and disorder in the physical world, that things tend to disperse. So we're fighting a tough battle to keep things sealed off. And in the case of some things, you know, pesticides or something like that, the length of time that before they break down is sort of within human imagination. The problem of plutonium is its half-life is 24,000 years. To get it down to, say, a thousandth of its current strength, you need 10 half-lives. Now you're talking about 250,000 years. You know, these are timescales beyond our imagination. But it reminds me of something, Dave, you mentioned earlier, which is how do we balance current concerns and future concerns. Rob touched on this a moment ago. What Rob and I ended up thinking was that guarding things well in the present gives us our best fighting chance of keeping them sealed off in the future. And trying to imagine and think about and take responsibility for the future will lead us to make better decisions about the present. So it doesn't seem to us the present versus the future. But we have a tough situation with industrial waste and with nuclear waste in particular, and giving it the kind of careful thought that goes beyond this fiscal quarter or the 2, 4, 6 years of our political cycle is a good thing, and actually a hopeful thing that people are beginning to think about the longer-term safety of these substances.
Rob Moss, really quickly, economically, is nuclear power still viable when we look at the advances we've made in solar?
Well, my own view, personal view, and I'm speaking for myself here, is I don't think so. The two new nuclear power plants, Plant Vogtle and the South Carolina-Georgia border, the first two new plants that have been built in quite a long time, I think were initially budgeted $800 million. I think it's coming in right now about $12 billion. It's very expensive. It's extremely hard to do. And I agree with the caller. I think that the caller was right on about that the waste has never been figured into the bottom lines, never, ever been figured into the bottom lines. Who pays for that? How do we even begin to think about nuclear power?
Well, we do.
And the future of nuclear power.
Taxpayers these days.
Waste.
Rob Moss, thank you so much. He's an environmental studies professor at Harvard University, and Peter Galliston, professor of physics at Harvard. Their film is called Containment. You can see it online at pbs.org. Thank you both for joining us.